We want to talk about the second touch, the scripture that was just read for us from Mark chapter 8. And we'll talk about that this morning and study that in depth. Because for a long time, as a young person, that was a very troubling miracle to me. And so I want to hopefully, if it's ever troubled you, that why did Jesus take two tries to heal somebody? If that's ever troubled you, we want to set your mind at ease this morning with understanding this miracle. As we begin, I want us to think first of all about sight itself. It's one sense that most of us depend on more perhaps than any other. It's the one that if we had to, we might give up another of our senses in order to keep it. If we had to choose, we would probably rank it right up there close to the top. We might even try to be philosophical about it. If we lost a hand or a foot, we say, well, that, you know, I can live without that. But sight is a difficult one. And those who suffer the loss of sight, it's devastating to their lifestyle. They have to make a lot of hard adjustments to that. And the importance that we place on our vision is seen in the way that we talk. Wait, did you notice that? I just said it was seen in the way we talk. But when we talk, we hear, we don't see. And yet we use language that describes vision and sight in that way so often to describe things that really don't have anything to do with our actual physical sight. Words like see, watch, look, blind, eyes, sight. We use these words to describe all sorts of things in our daily conversations, even things that are not about vision itself. Physical sight is often a metaphor for spiritual or mental or emotional perceptiveness. Somebody might say, I see how you feel. Somebody might say, I see, when they really mean, I understand something. We accuse people of being blind when what we really are thinking is they're just stupid. They just don't know anything. They don't understand anything. We say, open your eyes, when we want somebody to think about something more clearly. We say that a person has vision if they've looked forward to the future of what they want to have happen, if they have ambition. Someone who thinks ahead has foresight. When we've had something happen and we look back on it, we have hindsight. And that hindsight is 20/20, which is good vision. When we really come to know and understand another person, we say we can see right through them. Or we can read them like a book. Or things like that. All throughout our language are scattered these words about vision. Vision is certainly important. And you know, Jesus did that same thing. He compared physical vision, physical sight, with mental perceptiveness many times. The eyes referred not just to those in your head, but also to those in your heart, which I hope you don't have actual eyes in your heart. That would be a serious problem. But we think about that way, and we speak about that way, and Jesus did too. The Pharisees were blind guides because they were leading people without understanding God's way. It was because they wouldn't open their hearts to the truth. Oh, they could see just fine physically, but they wouldn't see spiritually. And you know, another fascinating thing about sight is that of all the miracles recorded in the Old Testament, and there are an abundance of them, we might think the most amazing thing would be the raising of the dead, and that's recorded in the Old Testament. The prophets of old raised people from the dead. And yet, we have here in the Gospel of Mark, as well as the other Gospels, a record of someone being healed from blindness, being able to see again. And that's not recorded anywhere in the Old Testament. In fact, so much of it is noticed that in John 9, when Jesus heals a blind man, that blind man himself, when he's questioned about it, he says, it's never been heard of since the beginning of the world that one born blind could
could see
after he had been healed by Jesus. He recognized that this was something special. The prophecies about the coming Messiah even included the statement that he would give sight to the blind. And so Jesus coming, healing not only different illnesses and casting out demons and even raising the dead, but the fact that he restored the sight of the blind is one of those things that makes it clear that he is the Messiah. There is a secret, though, about Jesus' healing of the blind. Sometimes it's not just about healing the blind. Let's consider the blindness in Mark. As Mark describes it, and Mark counts two cases of Jesus healing the blind. These aren't the only times that Jesus healed the blind, but Mark records two of these. So let's consider these blind men. The first is Mark 8, 22 through 26 that we just read. The second is Mark 10, verses 46 through 52, and we'll look at that one toward the end. The first is the blind man at Bethsaida. The second, the blind man who's actually given a name, Bartimaeus, the son of Timaeus, and he was at Jericho. These two healings bookend this little short section of the Gospel of Mark, where Jesus is trying to disciple his disciples a little better and a little more, trying to get them to overcome the blindness that they're suffering from. So it's totally appropriate that Mark would use the healing of two different blind men to show the blindness of Jesus' disciples and how it needed to be healed as well. And that's an important thing for us. We need to recognize the need we have to be healed of our blindness. There are certainly many other blind people in the gospel other than these two. Oh, not the physically blind ones, but the mentally blind ones. In Mark 4:12, the crowds don't see. They see, but they don't see. And then in Mark 8, verses 17 and 18, Jesus asks the disciples, "Do you still not see? Do you have eyes, but you fail to see? Are you not understanding?" is what he's really asking them. He knows they saw the miracles. We talked about that in class, the miracles of the feeding of the 5,000 and the 4,000. And they saw him walking on the water, and they saw him calm the storm. And they saw these things, but they're not really perceiving them. The Pharisees have some sharp eyes. Their eyes, however, aren't being used for the right thing. They're keeping a close watch. Mark 3 and verse 2, 7 and verse 2. Again later on in 11, 18, 12, 12, and 14, 1. It talks about how they're watching him. Watching his every move to see what he does and where he goes and what he teaches and everything about him. But they're only doing it not to learn from him, but to accuse him of something. They're going to find a way to destroy him, a way to arrest him. But this play on words with the theme of blindness, this use of sight and seeing and blindness and eyes, all of these things in a metaphorical way to describe a spiritual condition, is an important part of what Mark is trying to portray for us. Mark uses sight words to point out the heart problems that people have. Just as he used the parable that Jesus told of the sower to talk about those same heart conditions. Now he talks about that with the form of blindness. And physical blindness symbolizes another kind of blindness that's much more serious. We talked about how important our physical sight is to our everyday lives. Most of us either drove or we rode with somebody else that was driving to church this morning. Without sight, that would be impossible. We couldn't see to drive. We wouldn't be able to drive. And there are so many things that depend upon that sight. And yet there is a sight that's more important than our physical sight. And we want to focus on that. Let's consider this section. We'll call this the discipleship section of Mark. And let's consider the structure here. The function of some of the different sections. The identity section that we've talked about, where the question is, who is this Jesus? And he's doing miracles and he becomes popular, but not necessarily for the right reasons. People are just after the miracles. And we see those things. Mark chapter 1, verse 14, all the way up through 8 and verse 21 here. We're seeing this. Who is Jesus? He's doing all of these events. We've seen the way that different people react differently to him. They take him in a different way because of their different hearts that they have. They're confused, some of them, about who he is. The disciples, at least, they're ready to confess who Jesus is, that he is the Messiah, in spite of their failure to understand everything about who he really is. They don't really know him as much as they would like to. They think they know who he is, and they'll confess that he is the Christ, but they don't really understand what being the Christ means. And it's kind of unfair because they won't really understand that until after the death and resurrection. So it's kind of unfair of us to judge them at this point because they had not experienced that thing that to us is long past history. But then this middle section, it functions as a section of events from Mark 8:22 through the end of chapter 10 and verse 52. A section where Jesus is traveling toward Jerusalem. He's on the way somewhere. He's headed toward a final destination. And as he's headed in this direction, the disciples kind of know who he is, but they don't know what kind of Messiah he is yet. And in their lack of understanding, that we saw the denseness, the dullness of these disciples last week, but now we look at the opportunity they have to start to see more clearly, to start to really get a grasp on who Jesus truly is. The structure of this section is three cycles of the same threefold pattern. We have a prediction, a misunderstanding, and an explanation three times in this section. The only two healings that are mentioned here as far as healing of the blind are introduce this section and conclude this section. These two healings of blind men. Why would that bookend this particular section? Well, because of what's happened before and what's going to happen after that the disciples are still not understanding. These two stories about healing the physically blind serve to highlight the theme that Jesus has of the spiritually blind. As we consider then the first of these blind men, the blind man at Bethsaida. Here Jesus heals this man who's been physically blind. And yet it's an unusual healing, isn't it? It's unlike any of the others that we've seen. Let's notice again what happens here in Mark 8, beginning in verse 22. They came to Bethsaida, and they brought a blind man to Jesus and asked him to touch him. He took the blind man by the hand. He brought him outside of the village. Then he spit on his eyes, placed his hands on his eyes, and asked, "Do you see anything?" Now, did Jesus really need to ask? Didn't he already know whether the man could see or what? We might focus on things that are... Why did he spit on his eyes? That's not significant. Jesus often did strange things when he was healing people, sticking his fingers in the ears of the deaf, touching the tongue of the mute, making mud and sticking it on someone's eyes. He did some strange things, but those weren't really the thing that healed. It was his power that did the healing. And so he asked this man, "Do you see anything?" Regaining his sight, he said, "I see people, but they look like trees walking." Now apparently this man hadn't been blind all of his life, because he had a concept of what trees looked like to know that the people looked like trees. Someone who'd been blind all their life could be given incomplete sight, and for all they would know, it was complete sight. They wouldn't know the difference. So this man apparently had had sight and lost it. So he sees, but he isn't seeing properly. He's seeing something, but it's still blurry to him. Then Jesus placed his hands on him again, and he opened his eyes, and his sight was restored, and he saw everything clearly. And Jesus sent him home, saying, "Don't go into the village." So we have here an odd situation. Why does Mark tell this particular story? Is he trying to cast some doubt on Jesus' abilities? Because, oh, it took him two times this time to heal the guy. He couldn't get it right the first time. Even Jesus makes mistakes. Is it just another example that, oh, Jesus still has power and look what he can do? Or is this miracle something more? Is it like the accounts of the feeding of the multitudes where there's more to it? Where it's not just a physical thing, but also a spiritual thing. Yes, Jesus fed the crowds physically, but he was also there to feed them spiritually. Yes, Jesus restored the sight of this blind man, but there's more to it than just healing a blind man. Jesus performs this miracle at this time for a purpose. This is the only miracle of any that Jesus did where it ever involved two stages, where Jesus didn't do it right the first time, so to speak. How is that? In every other instance, Jesus simply touched them or speaks the word. Sometimes, as we saw with the woman who had the bleeding problem, she touched him. He didn't say or do anything except be there. And she touched him and she was healed immediately. So we shouldn't doubt Jesus' power just because he does it two times here. This individual needs a second touch to be able to have complete vision. It was after that second touch that his sight was completely restored and he saw everything clearly. But what's really happening here? Didn't Jesus have enough power? Maybe he hadn't got enough sleep. He was tired that day. And maybe he hadn't eaten. He was hungry. He didn't have enough power. Is that what happened here? No. Did Jesus underestimate how much power it would take and so he just didn't try hard enough? Was it that he just wasn't really paying attention and so he didn't get it quite right? No. Might it be instead that he's trying to give us a lesson? He's teaching us some insight here, even as he's placing his hands on this man's eyes, not once, but twice, to indicate something beyond physical sight. What is the meaning of this miracle in Mark's gospel? Well, the context is what helps us see clearly what's really going on here. There are skeptics who have tried to point to this one and say, oh, see, there's a problem here. There are some who would say, whoa, Mark should have left this one out because it could cast doubt on Jesus' abilities. But this isn't about Jesus' abilities. We've already seen time and again in Mark's account Jesus' abilities. There's no doubt about his abilities. What we have here is a lesson. The context immediately preceding this was the case where, after time and time again of seeing Jesus' miracles, the disciples still didn't understand, still didn't fully believe. And in fact, the verse right before this miracle is Jesus saying to them, "Do you still not understand? Do you still not see clearly?" And so Jesus then performs this. They had misunderstood the warning about the yeast of the Pharisees and Herod that he had given them. He accuses them of spiritual blindness. And then Mark explains how they didn't understand. And then immediately after this section, Peter confesses that Jesus is the Christ, but he doesn't still understand what that means, because when Jesus says he's got to go suffer many things and die, Peter rebukes him for it. So he still doesn't see clear, even though he confesses. So on both sides of this miracle are people who are not seeing things clearly spiritually. They're spiritually blind. And so Mark uses this miracle of Jesus, and Jesus used this miracle in this setting to help them understand that they weren't understanding, to help them see that they weren't seeing clearly. See, Peter was seeing Jesus. "You're the Messiah. You're the Christ, the Son of God." But he wasn't seeing him clearly. He was seeing who Jesus was, but not what it meant for Jesus to be who he was. This theme continues on through chapter 10 of trying to get the disciples to see the truth. They may not like the truth. Have you ever had to see a truth that you didn't like? A lot of us have been in that boat. But there was something that we didn't want to believe it. We didn't like it, but we needed to see it anyway, because it was the reality that we were living with. And Peter needs to understand that. He needs to learn not only that Jesus is the Christ, but what it means for him to be the Christ, that he's going to have to die, he's going to have to be sacrificed. He doesn't understand that. In fact, none of the disciples understand that. Even when it's happening, they can't stand that it's happening. And then after it happens, they give up. They think that's the end. But the healing of this physical blindness shows what Jesus is attempting to do with his disciples. It shows very clearly that they came to Jesus completely blind. They didn't know anything about God's truth. They had been taught wrong things by blind guides all their lives. And Jesus has slowly been trying to pull the cataracts off of their eyes so that they can see. He touches their eyes. They see a little bit. He touches again. They see a little bit more. He touches again and again and again, here and there, scraping off that cataract until eventually they'll be able to see clearly and completely. It's a progression. It's a pattern. And too often we don't realize and we don't see how important the second touch of Jesus is in understanding him. So many times in the church, we think of that initial touch when we were first believed that Jesus was the Son of God, and we repented of our sins and were baptized, and we were touched and forgiven of our sins. But then so many times, so many stop right there. That's enough. I'm a Christian now. But that's not the case. We need to see more clearly. We need to continue to learn and understand Jesus even better. So he has to do this miracle in this two-stage way to help the disciples see how little they actually see. And he does it for us as well. If we think we're seeing things clearly, we need to be careful. We may not be seeing them at all, or we may be seeing them incorrectly and blurry. And then we come to the healing of blind Bartimaeus. The end of this section, Mark 10, verses 46 through 52, we see a different story. This is the second healing of a man born, that was blind physically. But this one's a little different. In this case, notice the first time people brought the blind man to Jesus. But that's not the case with this one. Oh no, not at all. Bartimaeus, it has an overpowering desire to see. And he believes that Jesus can restore his sight. He's the one who wants to get to Jesus. People aren't bringing him to Jesus. People are trying to keep him away from Jesus. And he won't let them. He's not going to stop at anything. And so we see here, Mark 10, verse 46, beginning. They came to Jericho, and as Jesus and his disciples and a large crowd were leaving Jericho, Bartimaeus, the son of Timaeus, a blind beggar, was sitting by the road. When he heard that it was Jesus of Nazareth, he began to shout, "Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me." You see, he's eager to get to Jesus. Many scolded him, told him to get quiet, but he shouted all the more, "Son of David, have mercy on me." Jesus stopped and said, "Call him." So he called. They called the blind man and said to him, "Have courage, get up, he's calling you." He threw off his cloak, he jumped up, and he came to Jesus. And Jesus said to him, "What do you want me to do for you?" And the blind man said, "Rabbi, that I might see again." And Jesus said to him, "Go, your faith has healed you." And immediately he regained his sight and followed him on the road. This is a different situation, isn't it? This man recognizes he's blind and he wants to see so badly that he risks offending everybody around him to get to the one person that he knows can restore sight to him. Oh, that we would have the kind of determination and dedication to see Jesus clearly that Bartimaeus had. And that's part of what Mark is trying to tell us. This isn't just a miracle story. There's a deeper lesson here. And again, here, Jesus, this also shows Jesus doesn't need two tries. This again emphasizes that that first one was a lesson. It wasn't a failure on Jesus' part, but it was Jesus doing exactly what he wanted. And what's the meaning of this miracle in Mark's gospel? Why does Mark have this one included here? Well, again, the immediately preceding context that we didn't read was that Jesus had predicted that he was on the way to the cross. He's predicted his death three times, and the disciples don't understand it. They're in denial. I mean, how could this man who can perform all these miracles, how could he be crucified? That can't happen. He can't die. He has the power. He raises people from the dead. He's not going to die. Surely not. They can't comprehend that that could even happen. And the context after this, of course, is the beginning of the last week of Jesus' life. This is what they often refer to as the Passion. Starts in chapter 11. See how much of Mark's gospel focuses on what's leading up to the death of Jesus. Starting in chapter 11, he does that. But every event, every confrontation, every word focuses on and preparing us for the cross. But this is the last time we see that the need to see clearly where Jesus is going to go before he has to get there. The healing of Bartimaeus is a metaphor for the healing Jesus is about to perform on his spiritually blind disciples. They are going to see clearly, but they're going to have to want to. And he knows he's chosen those who do want to. And they're going to get to see clearly. If we want to see Jesus clearly, we'll get to see him clearly as well. He'll touch us in the way that he touched these blind men and bring our sight. You see, his disciples are different from the crowds. They're different certainly than the Pharisees, because the disciples want to see. They have the desire like Bartimaeus does. Do we have that desire? See, here's the startling message of Mark. Apart from the cross, it's impossible to understand Jesus or who he is. Apart from the cross, Jesus really isn't anybody. The cross is what makes him who he is. Even if he had come and done all the miracles and done all the prophesying and done all the teaching, if he didn't go to the cross, we wouldn't be here this morning worshiping because of him. How important that is. There's only one thing that can touch a disciple's life so deeply that all the blindness gets swept away, and that with eyes wide open, that disciple follows Jesus along the way. And that thing is the cross. Anyone who tries to remove the cross from the story of Jesus has missed what the point of the story of Jesus is all about. You see, there's the ultimate touch. It goes far beyond any of the physical things that Jesus did, any of those healings. His touch is so much more. We have the two stories, the two parables, really, about these blind men. They were miracles, and yet they were lessons being taught with those miracles. Some people are going to need more than one touch in order to see clearly. We find that all the time when we go out and study with people and try to tell them about Jesus. They don't see Jesus clearly the first time we tell about him. They have to be taught again and again, more and more details, more and more information about Jesus in order to start to see him clearly. But then also how important it is, if we want to see clearly, to have that desire. Bartimaeus could have sat on the side of the road as Jesus and the crowd passed on by, and he would have remained blind. There are so many people who are sitting on the sidelines saying, well, I'm sure there's some religion out there that's important, but who knows how to find it? We've got to get up and try. We've got to make that effort. We've got to be willing to look. We need to understand the beauty of these two stories, these two miracles for modern disciples today. Because we need to understand, physically Jesus is not going to heal our blindness like he did those two men. But spiritually, he's still in the business of healing blindness just like he was back then. And he can help us see more clearly. Jesus will provide a second and sometimes a third and a fourth touch to us in order to help us to see more clearly. He's a patient healer. He knows that healing doesn't happen all at once for us. He knows that even after he's forgiven our sins, the pain and the consequences of some of those sins live on in our lives for quite some time. He knows that even after we believe in him, we're still going to struggle. We're still going to have temptations that are going to come our way. Jesus has provided, at the cost of His life, the ultimate touch that should open our eyes. "'Twas battered and scarred, and the auctioneer thought it scarcely worth his while to waste much time on the old violin, but held it up with a smile. "What am I bidding, good folks?" he cried. "Who'll start the bidding for me? A dollar, then two. Only two? $2, and who'll make it three? $3 once, $3 twice, going for three, but no." From the room far back, a gray-haired man came forward and picked up the bow. Then, wiping the dust from the old violin and tightening the loosened strings, he played a melody pure and sweet as a caroling angel sings. The music ceased, and the auctioneer, with a voice that was quiet and low, said, "What am I bid for the old violin?" And he held it up with the bow. $1,000, and who'll make it two? $2,000, and who'll make it three? $3,000 once, $3,000 twice, and going and gone, said he. The people cheered, but some of them cried, "We do not quite understand. What changed its worth?" Swift came the reply, "The touch of the Master's hand." And many a man with life out of tune and battered and scarred with sin is auctioned cheap to the thoughtless crowd, much like the old violin. A mess of pottage, a glass of wine, a game, and he travels on. He is going once and going twice. He's going and almost gone. But the Master comes, and the foolish crowd never can quite understand the worth of a soul and the change that is wrought by the touch of the Master's hand. Have you been touched by the Master? Do you need to be touched by the Master's hand? What has His touch done for you? Have you seen more clearly because of His touch? Do you need to see more clearly? Do you need Him to touch you again? Do you need to come back to Him again and again? If you have a need to respond to the invitation this morning, for whatever reason, please come as we stand and sing.